One of the things I never liked about the Republican Party was the deviousness, particularly the, this is not my father's Republican Party, because I actually respected that party, but the deviousness over the last 10 or so years in which they don't go after an issue head on. They attack it around the corners and make it impossible. I used to do a lot of writing for poker magazines, and I used to contribute regular regulatory columns back during the time that the Uniform Internet Gaming Enforcement Act came out. And that basically, everybody says, banned online gambling. Well, no, it didn't. You can still gamble online. They didn't go after gambling because they don't have the guts to go after gambling. What they did was they went after the federal payment processing system, and they said it's illegal for you to process any winnings through the federal processing system. So the end result, the effect was to make it an illegal thing to do, but gambling is still perfectly legal. Same thing with the abortion thing. We're never going to go after Roe v. Wade, but what we're going to do is we're going to put a lot of trap laws in place. We're going to put a lot of conscience laws in place. We're going to make you have to go through so many health and safety hoops and whistles that it's going to be impossible for you to do what is your legal right to do because you can't keep the clinic open because you can't follow the rules. And the deviousness of it all is something that has just happened in the last 10 to 15 years. And that's the part of it that I think needs people to speak up. Because I mean, you've got campaign adverts out there that are blatantly lying, and nobody, there's no authority, either the FCC or the FEC, that has the guts to stand up and say, stop doing that, it's against the law, and here's the fine, or here's what's going to happen. They don't care. They're just going to do it anyways, even if it's wrong and it's a lie.
Well, part of my own pen is a comic pen, and the fodder for political satire on this is amazing. And when I heard of a Virginia legislator who said, okay, this is what you want to do to women, well then fine. If you want Viagra, then you should get a proctology exam. And you had to admire them. I just wish they'd followed through and really made it a cross-country issue the way they'd these fools have done this with the abortion. I am old enough to remember pre-Roe v. Wade, as I'm sure you are as well. And my own mother lost a friend who was forced to find an illegal solution, mm-hmm. and it cost her life. And whenever the question comes up of will you stand with women, will you stand for the human rights of women and their choices, I have to say yes. I say yes for her. I say yes for my mother. I say yes for my wife and my daughters and whatever granddaughters I might have, because this is unconscionable in a civilized society that women are being put upon this way. I have asked for years why we've never finished the battle getting women equal pay. I think that battle's been put aside for far too long. But this is beyond words. It is tremendous, and it has to be fought. And I salute you for your book, Vagina Wars. Before we go further into the book, why don't you tell our audience where they can find it?
Yeah, it's I've done an exclusive with Amazon, and most people that are of the progressive bent say, oh God, Amazon, well, I don't want to support them, and I do apologize for that. It is though a good platform for getting out into multiple countries quickly with a very, very strong message. And if you don't want to purchase a Kindle, which I also understand, they do right on the page where you can find the book. Again, it's The Vagina Wars, the GOP's War on Women. They have a space on the right-hand side where you can actually get a Kindle reader. And for example, I read all my ebooks on my iPad via the Kindle reader, and it's been very, very helpful. After 3 months and the exclusivity deal is over, I'll put it up on Nook and some of the other platforms, but we really wanted this to become a big campaign issue, and frankly, we're very heartened by the response that we've had so far. I mean, this morning it was again at number 5. It's a long hike to get up over Politico and their power at number 4. But, you know, to be the behind the 2 political ebooks and Game Change, you know, is pretty heady stuff as far as we're concerned. And we're very, very grateful that so many people are understanding how important this message is and important to get out.
Let me ask you a question. As you were doing your research on this, were you able to find a Romney position on this?
No, not at all. I mean,
what was I thinking? Romney.
Not even just find a Romney position, just find one Romney position, because as we know, I mean, and the interesting thing now is that if you look at the campaign, they recognize that you cannot win the election with a double-digit difference in the way in which women view you, and I think that's fabulous. I also, one of the things that really bothered me, and I make a bit of a deal of it in the book, is I want people to understand something that's not talked about a lot, and that's the impact of a Romney presidency on the Supreme Court. We have four justices now of the Supreme Court that are in their mid-70s, mid to late 70s. And two of them are conservative, but two of them are also some of the liberal icons, and including Justice Ginsburg. And so when I looked at that, there's the very real prospect that despite everybody before having one or two, and President Obama has appointed two very strong members to the bench, we could see in this next four-year presidency four Supreme Court justices appointed by a conservative president if Romney were to win. I don't know about you, but that prospect absolutely is the most frightening prospect of a Romney presidency, that you go from being just 5-4 to perhaps being as big as 6-3 or 7-2 conservative. And, you know, if you look at the likes of people that are there now with Scalia and Thomas, forget about women's rights, forget about individual rights, corporations will rule, and there'll be absolutely nothing to stop. So I'm very, very concerned about that, and I talk about that in a chapter of the book. The other issue that very much concerns me is, you know, the access overall to healthcare. If I look at what the Ryan budget has in plan, and if I look at what all of these pieces of legislation have planned, it's going to be absolutely devastating. If you think things are bad in Texas right now, for example, they're going to be 10 times worse in the next 6 months as a lot of the cuts start to kick in. And there's just this fundamental unfairness, and this is why we need to make huge changes both to bring in a Democratic Congress, or else we're going to find ourselves even further behind with more wars and more interventions in other parts of the world, and the U.S. still being the world's policeman.
With the a large number of Republican enthusiasts, they'd just as soon see somebody die without health care as to help them. Now, that seems the preferable situation. And also, they have no problem with more wars. And, I had the good fortune to hear Scalia speak at an ACLU conference in D.C. a few years back. And he made the same point that you just made a moment ago. He said, you know, just wait until we get a few more conservatives up here. You're going to see some real conservative decisions then. And, I mean, the crowd literally gasped.
Yeah.
Let's go back to your book.
Sure.
When you raise this issue, do you see this coming from something? I mean, how do you see the genesis of this whole attack on women? What do you think was the motivating factor for it? Simple opportunism or more?
No, interestingly, the motivation and the genesis of all this is a very real demographic time bomb that is exploding in the United States, in which traditional white males are becoming a shrinking percentage of the population. And I make a lot of connections both here, but in my earlier book about the Egyptian Revolution, Egypt Unshackled, to the impact of demographics over time. And that is the one wave nobody can ignore. Mubarak did so at his peril. He ignored the fact that, you know, yes, he was in his 80s and 70s, and most of the generals are in their 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. They control all of the wealth, but the average population of Egypt is 29. Well, we're seeing a similar situation happening in the United States, but not in terms of age, in terms of the fact that women now make up 53% of the population and the growing number of Hispanics that are there. And I wrote an article back in November on UK Progressive, my magazine, in which I said, I honestly can see with Romney as the nominee a path to 400 electoral votes for Barack Obama. And at the time, Gingrich was very strong. And if Newt Gingrich is the nominee, 500 electoral votes. Because the South would be the biggest impact. They would actually lose several of the more moderate Southern states, and they would lose the West altogether. And I laid out the case for that in terms of what had happened in 2008 and what was likely to happen in 2012. And it was only based on one thing, demographics. And the fact that, you know, unless, of course, the economy completely craters and tanks between now and November, and, you know, we find ourselves engaged in a war in Iran, it's pretty much a cakewalk for President Obama, but we do need every progressive out there voting for him. The worst thing we can do is sit back on our hands and think we've got this one in the bag. The second worst thing we can do is believe all of the conservative pundits, because one of the statistics I saw just yesterday was there's something like 4,600 hours of cable news television time that has to be filled from the 1st of May till the end of October. So you know they're going to do anything they can to create controversy, a meme, or whatever, because their financial well-being is all based upon the ability to gin up a controversy, so people have to spend a lot of money on adverts, and there'll be billions of dollars out there to be spent. So they're going to do everything they can to get their fair share of it.
Well, that's for sure. You know, with Olympia Snowe and a few other moderate Republicans leaving, certainly it bodes ill for anything like the old honorable Republican moderate. I remember Lowell Weicker, I'm sure you do as well. And even William Buckley, for all his excesses, he was always prepared to entertain a rational argument, a fair, equitable discourse, and at least listen to the other side. And what we seem to be seeing in the Republican legislature is clearly people who have no interest in a rational discussion.
No. And the interesting thing about that, taking it to its conclusion, I mean, my senator was Edward Brooke and Teddy Kennedy. And you could not ask for two more different people, but they knew how to work together for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts back when I was a kid, and they knew how to, you know, when to fight and when not to. One of the favorite things, I can't remember whose memoir it was, whether it was Tip O'Neill's or Ronald Reagan's, you know, when it came to legislation, they fought like cats and dogs. And the way they could tell they probably had done the right thing was if both ended up hating the final result. That's what compromise looked like. I mean, I've been doing stories on Iraq Camp Ashraf, which is sort of stepping into a hornet's nest, because in the UK and in the EU, the group that they represent, the MEK, are no longer a terrorist organization. In the US, they are. So you've got six or seven governments, the United Nations, everybody else involved in this, but the pawns were these 3,400 people that were sitting in the middle of the desert. And the way I knew I had a pretty good story was if I found myself with the folks in the Iranian propaganda ministry very upset with me, and if I also had the MEK upset with me saying I wasn't going far enough, I usually knew I'd hit the ball pretty much straight down the middle. And this is what's missing in U.S. government right now, is this ability to find that middle ground and to compromise and to work together to find solutions. Everybody gets more and more entrenched. And as we lose Blue Dog Democrats and moderate Republicans like Olympia Snowe and Susan Collins and others, it only gets worse. Congress gets even more unmanageable than it is today. And issues like women's issues and issues that I wrote about in the book become even more critical going forward.
Do you think there's a direct relationship between this war on women and the, let's just say, the modest undertaking of providing some health care for Americans in general?
Well, I'm a big supporter of single-payer systems because I've been in one for 15 years.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I absolutely adore the National Health Service. And I get very angry when I see people attack the UK NHS or any other system in Europe, because they're not essentially profit-based system. They're care-based systems. And what, you know, what happens in a care-based system is that, yes, sometimes you have to wait. But I got to tell you, when my retina detached 5 years ago and I was walked into the casualty unit, emergency room, you know, they immediately rushed me up, and two other people who were there for elective surgery that day got bumped so my eyesight could be restored. And if somebody comes to you and says, I'm sorry, but we had to bump you because we had an emergency come in, and they explain the situation, I'm going to be the last person to complain. I think we have this interesting dilemma in the States in that everybody feels entitled to be first in line. And, you know, yes, you can be first in line, but then get a supplemental insurance policy and go to a private doctor to be first in line so you don't, you know, end up being, you know, have to wait in a queue. Everybody else is pretty much satisfied by saying, okay, you know what, it's elective. The more acute, right to the front you go. The more elective, yeah, you may have to wait a few weeks for it before you actually get seen. And the system works. You walk into casualty, you walk out, nobody's signing forms, there's nobody there to, there's no cashier, there's no billing office, there's nothing. I mean, you even walk out with a bag, paper bag, satchel filled with the medicines that you need, you know, to get you through the next 10 days. I mean, and it, I just find it, you know, a much more civilized system than to find myself and listen to my colleagues saying that, you know, birth control pills that I can remember were $12 a month back in whenever it was, you know, now cost $3,000 a year. That's $500 a month, now or $250 a month. It just seems insane amount of money. And it's all built around the fact that, you know, the United States have to pay for subsidies of drugs that are picked up by other governments. And, well, too bad. It should all be subsidized at some level.
Let's go back to this this war on women.
Sure.
Obviously, beyond scaring the paranoid, it seems that there's so little to be gained. The GOP has run hard against immigrants. They've run hard against women. You know, by pushing further and further to the right, the only logical electoral reaction one must assume is that they're going to be limiting and limiting and limiting those who might appeal to them. The only potential gain is that they make anybody who's even a moderate look like an extremist. Yeah. And I was wondering, if you play this out past the election, do you see this GOP war on women continuing? Do you think this is going to be a real continued thrust to the GOP?
I think it has the potential to do so. I mean, you're about to have another wave election, and hopefully that will gain control of some of the state legislatures back, or at least bring some balance in. 2010 was an abomination of an election, not just what happened in the U.S. Congress, but what happened in state houses across the United States. When you cede total control to one party, as you've seen happen in Wisconsin and in Michigan and in Florida and yeah, other states, it creates this environment where they say, hey, I'm a business person. I was a business person when I started. If you're Governor Scott or if you're Governor Walker or whatever, let's get what we can through to make certain that our nest is feathered so that when or if we get kicked out, we've got ourselves, you know, a good situation going forward. I don't think that will ever be allowed to happen to that extent again. I think voters now understand, I hope voters understand, you know, the dangers of allowing one party to take complete and total control like that. That said, it's like looking at, you know the old story about the turtle and the scorpion. The turtle wants to cross the river, and the scorpion says, put me on your back. And the turtle says, no, I won't do that. You're going to sting me, and then we'll die. And, you know, the scorpion says, no, I won't do that. We'll get across. Halfway across the river, you know, the scorpion stings the turtle, and they both sink. And as they're sinking, the turtle says, why did you do that, knowing we're both going to drown here? And the scorpion says, I just couldn't help myself. Well, this is the situation you have, and they have got to reach out and lash out and sting. And I don't know that you're ever going to change that you know, fundamental nature of how the right acts. Even if they know it's bad, they're going to try it anyways. The thing is that when they tried it in the past, they were able to do it because the left just sort of sat back and let them do it. Now there's people like you, there's people like me, there's people all over the blogosphere and all over the media that are demanding accountability, and it's no longer the cakewalk that it used to be for them. They actually are being called to account by people like Maddow and Lawrence and Ed and others. And it's nice to see. And we need to keep doing that because the right is well-funded. I mean, all their bloggers are paid millions by a variety of sources. None of us are paid millions. Hopefully we'll get to a point where, you know, that does happen. And we've got to keep the fight going because, I mean, this is for our daughters. This is for our granddaughters. And when I look at, you know, these pieces of legislation, I got angry. I don't think I've been this angry in quite some time when I read some of the pieces of legislation that I read in putting this book together, and you know Governor Vaginal Probe up in Virginia and others, because they have this right-wing Christian theological bent to the way in which they go about governing their states or their commonwealths. And you say to yourself, that's just insane. You've got to, as a representative of the people, represent all the people, not just the Christians, or not just the John Birch Society, or not just the group of corporations and businesses that put you there.
Well, I salute you. Let me ask you this: who do you see as the audience for this book? Is this to analyze the situation? Is this a suggestions, a how-to guide to change things? How would you characterize the book?
I would characterize it as a primer that gives them an idea of what the extent of what is going on, because a lot of people probably don't have the wonkish level of detail that I do. And I want to always contextualize anything I write into a, this is what this means to you and why you should be upset. I see this book as a call to arms. I see this book as a call to action. We cannot allow, for example, what John McCain is doing this week, which is attempting to change the narrative and whitewash away the last 6 months of attacking women as if it never happened. We can't allow the GOP to be a perfectly tuned weather vane, which was the words used by John Huntsman to describe Mitt Romney. We cannot allow them to just keep shifting in the wind and get away with it. They'll get away with it with the base, and there's no way any of us are going to be able to convince our crazy Tea Party uncle, so don't even try. Focus your efforts on the people with the brain, the independents that will decide this election, and just continually show them all of the ways in which the right is trying to whittle away at their rights. And even if they seem to think they're okay, point out to them, you know, that it's going to take 12 to 18 months to find a job if you were to lose your job today, for example. And what are you going to do? You may be all right now, but there's not a single person in a job anywhere in the United States that cannot be eliminated like that tomorrow. And they need to understand that there is no safety net out there for them if they're earning above a certain amount, and that that safety net that's there is fraying and is about to fall to the ground, and that these attacks on women just cannot be allowed to stand.
Well, Dennis, I want to thank you so much for this excellent interview. I want to congratulate you on the book, and I wish you every success, sir.
Thank you, Rick. It's been a pleasure.
You have a very good day, sir. Bye-bye. Okay. Awesome.
That work?
Yeah. Is there anything else that you wanted to get across that you didn't get to?
You know, I do so many of these in the course of a day, Rick, that
it's hard to keep straight.
I'm sure there's things that I don't say. I mean, I think the most important thing to understand is that this is I want people to understand that this election is probably the most important election they will ever face. You know, and that that staying at home, sitting on your hands, pouting because Obama didn't do everything you wanted him to do is not an option. You'll have to consider the alternative. If Obama loses, if they lose the Senate, even if they don't lose the Senate and it's, you know, hanging on by a thread, and the House is still in GOP control, it's going to be an extraordinarily difficult time for the next 4 years. And it's just going to become more and more obstructionist. I mean, the encouraging thing is that, you know, Obama seems to be finding the buds of a spine. And he's issued a lot of very good executive orders of late. And he's running against Congress. And he's starting to do the things that we would hope he would do. And you're going to see a slew of executive orders come out in a very timed fashion over the next 6 months to back Romney further and further and further into a corner. And I think they're going to be very successful at doing that. And that said, I don't trust this group. I don't trust these election voting machines. I wrote a long series on them, you know, in the past. I don't trust the tabulating systems or these Diebold machines. We do paper ballots here. We have an election coming up on the 3rd of May. I'll be up till 4 in the morning waiting for the results here locally. At the counting center, because that's the way it's done. Every ballot gets counted, checked, rechecked, and you have a really good indication at the end of the night who the winner is. We're just not up against an arbitrary 11 p.m. deadline like you are there in the States. You know,
and not to mention, as you pointed out, a technology that is proudly and loudly no paper, proudly and loudly proprietary, and proudly loudly in the hands of Republican apparatchiks.
Well, I don't know if you've ever watched it, but there's an old film out there from HBO called Hacking Democracy.
Yeah.
And you can see it online. And, you know, they've got it like in 6 or 7 segments. The last segment talks about something called the Hursti hack. Uh-huh. And this is a hack that you can do. There's two ways that you can get around the system. The difficult way is to hack the memory cards of each individual voting machine. The easier way is to hack the central tabulation computer. And when you watch that bit of film on the Hursti hack, you walk away thinking, oh my God. Because they literally, right there in front of the cameras, using this hack on the machine, were able to, despite everybody declaring and showing their ballot before it went through the scanner, flipped the results so it was 180 degrees completely different from what the voters actually said. And if you get into the central tabulation computer, you know, you can get that computer to say anything you want it to say. And in key states like Ohio, where we've had problems, in Florida, where we've had problems, in Arizona, where we've had problems, I don't trust it. I mean, I don't trust any result that comes out of those three states. The fortunate thing was that he won by 9 million votes last time. I think, you know, he could come close to that, but I don't think it's going to be that close. He's going to win more states, but I still worry about Ohio. I still worry about Florida. I still worry about Arizona, because I think Arizona is the Dems to take this year. You know, I broke the story of Pima County probably 4 years ago, and I've been on it ever since. This whole issue of these machines, I've talked to California Secretary of State because they basically threw out the system through an audit. And you know, we're relying on these busted machines and technology to, you know, tell us who won the election. And it's just not good.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Great interview.
All right, Rick. Take care.
Take care. You too, my friend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.